Sharon Ann Lynch, thanks for joining us. UNAIDS and Doctors Without Borders teamed up to study 23 countries, most in sub-Saharan Africa, to determine how well governments were getting medications to people who needed them. How did they do, generally?
Well, there are a couple of things to look at. One is in terms of progress reaching people in need. So what we found is that 6 countries out of the 23 are reaching a third or more of need, which is not enough, obviously, especially when we've had the Global Fund for 10 years, we've had PEPFAR for almost as long, trying to scale up treatment. So we've got limitations still in terms of funding, and then limitations in terms of scale up. So certainly it points to a need in increasing both counts. The other factor that we looked at were the set of tools, strategies, and policies in place, and to see whether policy barriers exist that are impeding access and scale up. And what we found is that there's a lot of room for improvement, but also a lot of cause for optimism.
One of the policy barriers that the report refers to is the workforce issue and whether governments will permit nurses and others to perform the tasks that doctors traditionally do.
That's right.
First, why is that important? And second, how are the countries doing with that? What's an example of something that's working?
Well, first, let me just say that even within the last 2 years, there have been 6 governments that have changed policies to allow nurses to initiate ART. So we looked at 18 countries in sub-Saharan Africa and their task-shifting policy, and 11 of those allow for nurses to start people on HIV treatment and continue their care. And it's so important because, of course, doctors, when we limit the right of prescribing and starting people on treatment to doctors, that means hospitals, that means big clinics, that means far away from where people live. So essentially, it has been a stranglehold on larger scale-up and access to treatment by limiting treatment only to doctors, which means limiting it to only the big clinics and the hospitals.
Is the root issue there the workforce issues, that there simply aren't enough doctors to treat people adequately?
Absolutely. There aren't enough doctors in countries. And plus, we have been simplifying HIV treatment to the point that it can be delivered by nurses. So in Lesotho, for example, nurses that have 2 years training, they're nurse assistants, they might be running the show all by themselves at a primary healthcare clinic. One, because the workforce has been so hard hit by HIV and TB itself, that the number one reason for attrition of the workforce is death due to HIV and TB. Two, we simply don't have enough healthcare workers working at the lowest level of care, and again, where people live. So once if we limit treatment only to hospitals and only to some of the big clinics at the district level, that means we don't see people until they're very, very sick. Very sick. At the primary health care level, we're more likely to catch people earlier in the disease progression and help them stay well.
Is the reluctance the same kind of reluctance we see here in the United States, where there's a debate going on about shifting from doctors to nurse practitioners?
So it's interesting in terms of the government's positions on this, and I'm familiar with a number of reasons of the government why they decided to switch. Governments weren't themselves, some of them, swayed by the point that we could scale up easier if we had nurses to initiate. Mm-hmm. What moved many governments to make the policy change was looking at their adherence rates, and then they figured they could improve adherence once nurses were allowed to treat people, because again, you're bringing treatment closer to home. So one government, in fact, was swayed by that point. Another government was swayed and got over the resistance from the professional unions, the labor force unions, by essentially looking at the fact that they were going to be able to keep the treatment at the lowest level in order to cut down on costs for the healthcare system itself. And then finally, some governments were swayed in terms of the cost effectiveness of reaching people sooner. So regardless of the resistance and also the reason that the government changed, it came down to reducing the burden on patients, reducing the requirements of the health system, and as well, reducing the cost per patient per year of treatment.
A final question. This notion of decentralization
goes
not only down to the community centers, the greater use of nurses, but there were some examples in your report of 6 people, all of whom are HIV, getting together and managing how they get their medications delivered.
Right.
Explain that.
So in Mozambique, in the northern province in Tet, where we've been working for more than 7 years, we formed a number, we started working on a one strategy, and I almost wanted to say we formed, but actually we didn't form. So there are self-formed groups of community ART groups. It's a group of six. They take turns going to the clinic to get medicines for the rest of the group. And frankly, it's the best adherence we've ever seen. The best, the lowest attrition that we've ever seen in any of our projects. So it's a very elegant strategy in the sense that it's a simple strategy to a rather complex question. But at its heart is mutual self-interest. And also what it relies on is simply making treatment fit into people's lives rather than the other way around. So people no longer lose a day of work, they no longer lose a day away from their family, simply walking to the clinic. Instead, relying on their five peers in these in this group, they can get their treatment more easily.
Interesting lessons from the ground level. Thank you so much, Sharon Ann Lynch of Doctors Without Borders.
Thank you.